Some properties where collections fell 5% from March. Some properties they fell 3%, some they fell 7%, and we had one property that fell about 9 or 10% from March. None of those are earth-shaking numbers given the nature of this earth-shaking black swan event. I mean, because we still have the ability to distribute profits if we wished in all of those properties. We immediately banned all distributions. We told our investors, our job has changed. We are not here to give you money.
This is the Real Estate Investing 365 podcast, your go-to source for real estate investing strategies so you can start living the life you want and get where you want to go with your host, Justin Hanna.
Hey, everybody. Another episode, Real Estate Investing 365. Today, I got an awesome guest with me. You guys probably heard him on other shows from Joe Fairless, Michael Blanc, all kinds of different podcasts. I got Neil Bawa with me. He's the founder and CEO of Grow Capitus. Isn't that how you say it, Neil?
That's right.
Grow Capitus. He's a commercial real estate investment company. He's a CEO and founder of Multifamily U, where he teaches people about the multifamily acquisition business. He's done big things, kind of came from nothing like all of us are trying to do anyways. And so Neil, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Justin. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting times right now. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but how are you holding up with the old coronavirus down there in the Bay Area?
I think the first month was very difficult. I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what the cadence was. Should I be running, walking, crawling, or sitting in bed? Yeah. It was very difficult, right? Because our company was going gangbusters. We did, 8, 9 projects in the 12 months before, immediately preceding this. And so we looked at this and we said, what is the right cadence? And eventually we realized that the right cadence was, we don't know. It's okay to say that we have no freaking clue. And so we stopped trying to kill ourselves, trying to figure out what that cadence was. And then it got a lot easier. Since then, we've just tried to take it easy, work on our systems and processes, fill the holes in the team, do those sorts of things, and then continue working on projects in certain areas.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have a lot of vacancies or anything that went on or non-payments, I guess?
Some. I think that obviously when you have a large portfolio, we have over 2,000 units nationwide and we're in 8 different states, you're going to see some variance, right? And we have Class B assets, we have Class C assets, right? So there's a fair amount of variance and we were okay with that. Class B properties, nothing. I mean, just, I can't even tell you if there's any statistical difference between the rents that we collected in April and May and in Feb, maybe $1,000. Class C properties were kind of all over the place. So we had, some properties where collections fell 5% from March. Some properties, they fell 3%. Some, they fell 7%. And we had one property that fell about 9 or 10% from March. None of those are earth-shaking numbers given the nature of this earth-shaking black swan event. I mean, because we still have the ability to distribute profits if we wished in all of those properties. We immediately banned all distributions. We told our investors, our job has changed. We are not here to give you money. Our job now is to protect your capital. And I'm going to protect that capital by building a war chest. And I'm going to communicate with you twice as often. And I'm going to be very conservative. So we stopped doing, rehabs. We basically retuned our rehabs for speed. So our goal was to basically get the units rented as soon as possible. So we retuned everything. And then things kind of have looked fairly normal in the last few months. I'm curious to see how they look in August because that unemployment money is going to run out at the end of July.
Yeah, I'm curious too. Most people I've talked to, they kind of have the same story to where, their vacant or their collection numbers are still up high, maybe a couple people here and there that aren't paying their rents or asking for a little bit longer. But for the most part, it is everybody's still paying, which is good. So that we'll dive more into that in the future or later on in this podcast. I want to talk about, what your thoughts are with the coming market. And obviously everybody has their own opinion on that. But why don't you give us a little background about where you come from? And you weren't always in real estate. You didn't just come out and all of a sudden have 2,000 units. So tell us about yourself, Neil.
Yeah, I'm a recovering technologist. So successful tech career, successful tech exit, loved technology, just happened to love real estate more. And now I am a technologist in real estate. I tell people I have a technology company that is successfully masquerading as a real estate company. And it's, you know, it's only half a joke, because if you look at the way we run our company, a technologist is going to fit in very quickly. Somebody who comes from traditional real estate and is, you know, 60 years old is going to be very confused. He's going to wonder about, so what part of your company is real estate? You guys seem to function completely like a startup. Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. I mean, we're up to 28 employees, so not quite a startup at this point, but we do function like a startup. We're extremely nimble. Almost everything is handled through technology. So in my mind, I'm still in technology. I'm just in the real estate vertical. So I've used, you know, the real estate vertical to implement my technological skills. But having said that, you know, so past career was not really real estate. I worked at a tech company for 17 years. I was a partner there. We sold that company in 2013 at class-leading valuations. We were extremely happy. I paid 53.6% in taxes in 2013. So I was just, you know, besides myself, paying taxes on millions of dollars. But even before that, I mean, I had the big fat tech salary. So I had my taxes to get down, and my journey in real estate accidentally started with that, when I started looking at how to cut down my taxes. You know, and a lot of people in tech, that's how their journey starts. They want to reduce their taxation.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. So you're kind of like the Elon Musk of real estate. You know, he's like a tech guy in the auto industry.
Well, I don't know if that is the right description. I'm kind of more like Bill Nye in that I'm constantly experimenting. I'm constantly, you know, posting stuff on the internet on my experiments. A lot of the webinars that are on my website, whether it's Lasil or Location Magic, are examples of thousands of hours of experiments that I've conducted, and then the results are presented back to people if they make sense. So yeah, I'm more the Bill Nye than the Elon Musk.
Okay, that sounds good. So in 2013, that's when you first kind of took your step into real estate, and you started with like single family or small multifamily, is that right?
I'd say that my first step came much earlier than that, but 2013 was the first time when I seriously started looking at taking other people's money. Okay. So before that, for 10 years, I was doing various things in real estate, but really not taking other people's money. There were a few people involved that were friends and family, and we did projects, but it was never really a syndication. So 2003, for example, we built a campus from scratch. And that was my first, you know, getting into real estate. Most people get into real estate by either doing, you know, hard money loans, or they do flips, or they do single family buy and hold. My first project in real estate was a $6 million build from scratch campus. So talk mm-hmm. about trial by fire. I mean, you're spending 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. working on the technology day job, and then from 6 to midnight, you're working on this huge campus that you're building. And it was crazy. You know, my CEO, my technology CEO, visionary man, very smart guy, one day basically says, I'm fed up being a renter. I want to be a landlord, right? And we have money, let's buy our own place. And I'm like, okay, that's a really good idea, Paul. But, you know, why not, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, he's going to go buy an office that's going to be ready, and we're all going to move in. It's going to be glorious. And so he goes off, and then he comes back a week later and said, you know, I put down a deposit in this place. I think you're going to really love it. It's astonishing. And he's really selling it to me, and he's laying it on thick. And I'm like, there's something wrong here. I mean, I haven't figured out what's wrong here, but something wrong here. He's trying to excite me. And he's like, okay, so you want to come take a look? So, you know, our office, the office that we were renting was in Fremont, and the site was about 3 miles away. So we could jump in the car and we go off there. And from the outside, it's a beautiful tilt top flex building. And I'm looking at it going, wow, this is going to be amazing. The branding that we're going to get is stunning. And sort of one corner office, we have this huge building. And so he's like, okay, so, you know, just understand that this requires some work. And I'm like, okay, maybe there's a room that we have to demolish. And so he walks me into this 27,000 square foot building, which is almost exactly the size of a football pitch, and there's nothing in there.
Oh my gosh.
Completely empty. I can see the ceiling. It's 22 feet high. And it's just this big, massive rectangle with nothing inside of it. And I'm like, Paul, where's the building? And he's like, well, we're going to build it. And I'm like, by we, do you mean you and me? Right? I haven't even rehabbed a room in my house. I mean, how are we going to build this thing? And you realize we have 9 months and 4 days left, and our landlord absolutely hates us and wants to charge us $10,000 a day of overages. And he's like, yeah, we're going to build this in 9 months. And I said, have you started on the permits? He said, no, we're going to do that. And so you can imagine the next 9 months and 4 days of my life, it took 9 months and 5 days. So we did pay $10,000 as a fine to our landlord. That was just in a complete nightmare because we were running our business, which was growing 30% year over year. And then the evening we're working on this stuff. And I bitched and I moaned and I complained every single day for 9 months. And I have not stopped thanking him since for 17 years.
I can imagine.
What we learned was crazy. People in real estate that are in real estate for 30 years didn't know what we learned in those 9 months.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it paid off. Do you guys still own that building today?
So my CEO had most of it. So he does. And he's, you know, 17 years later, the building's still paying rent, even though he sold the business 7 years ago. So yeah, it's been extremely fruitful. And again, just the learning, I mean, forget the tax benefits, which we got. The learning was incredible. I mean, I look at people in real estate who sometimes talk to me and they're very proud of stuff. And I walk into a building and I look up and I say, this room is 960 square feet. And they're like, how could you possibly know what the exact amount is? And the answer is each tile is 2x2. I just simply move my eyes back and forth and I look at the tiles and I know exactly how big the room is. Things like that. Like I walk into a room and immediately tell people your air conditioner is malfunctioning. Why? Because there's negative pressure. I can hear, my ears are popping, so I can hear that there's something wrong with the air conditioning. And they're like, no, nothing's wrong. And then 6 months later, they send me an email and say, how did you know I had a bad, you know, air intake valve in there? It's like when you build a building from scratch, you learn all of these variable airflow vents and things like that. And you're learning all this stuff while you're running a tech company, right? So it was quite amazing and terrifying all at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Well, and luckily, you're obviously a very smart individual, so you're able to take it all in. I think I would have been overwhelmed. I wouldn't know what to do, but you guys made it happen for sure.
And I think we were overwhelmed too. I mean, I think we made a bunch of mistakes, but what we realized that in real estate is if you are your own tenant, you can make every mistake in the book and still make a tremendous amount of money. It's much harder when you're preparing a building for other people to be the tenants. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine when we were the tenant in our own building in the first year, there were lots of things that we had to fix that we hadn't, you know, done correctly. But we did it while we were still in the building. And, you know, it's like somehow we muddled through the first year, which was hard.
Yeah.
So we had a huge advantage. I suggest every business that can do it should buy their own real estate.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like Brandon Turner on the Bigger Pockets podcast, he always says, even if you lose money on your first couple deals or whatever, you know, it's fine because, I mean, try not to lose money. You don't want to lose money, but the education you're going to get that's going to accelerate your path forward over the next 10, 20 years of real estate career is just going to be, the return is going to be exponential, you know?
It is. And I want to point something out to people that are listening that may not understand just how phenomenally different real estate is. Okay. So, and I think this applies for any of you out there that have, you know, a day job. So it doesn't have to be a tech job. That maybe you're an engineer, maybe you're a lawyer, maybe you're just, you know, somebody that works in a career. What we have seen in real estate is that real estate is almost like an exponential curve. And these days, because of the coronavirus, people actually understand the concept of a hockey stick or exponential curve. It starts out slow. And for the first 2 or 3 years, people are kind of like, you know, this is not matching the hype. It's like, you know, people are supposed to be making millions of dollars. And the answer is, yes, the millions come, but it takes time. So it's a slow start. And then at some point it accelerates. And then you go into this incredible hockey stick, you know, time frame where you, for a while, you're going to double or triple your income for years and years and years. There's so many people in real estate that are over a million a year, by the way. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen in technology jobs. Let's say that you're this guy that walks on water and you're working for a big company like Google or LinkedIn or Apple. You know, they're going to start you off at a big salary, $200,000, maybe you're in the Bay Area, $300,000, maybe even a little more. But it's so difficult for anybody at that company to get to $400,000,
right?
Because C-level people are at $400,000, $450,000, $500,000, and you certainly are not going to get beyond $500,000. And the beauty of real estate is almost everyone that is reasonably smart within 10 years in real estate is going to either have lots of blockbuster years or some blockbuster years. And those will more than make up for the early slow years, more than.
Yeah, I totally agree. I tell people that all the time because my listeners know, but for you, I'm currently in the process of leaving my job shortly. And, you know, it's a good paying multiple six figures a year. You know, it takes a lot of overtime and I work a lot of weekends and all this stuff. And people are think, oh, you're crazy because you got this great job. It's like life's so easy. But the thing I tell them is for me to go to make $1 million a year, I'm never going to get there. You know what I mean? Or whatever my next goal is above that. And so at least I want to have the chance to go out and do my own thing and then build on that. And the opportunities are endless, you know, and real estate is definitely the avenue that is definitely makes it possible. So I agree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you can go in real estate from being somebody who sells your time for a living to get to the point where your time is yours. And different people make different choices. I had choices that I've made over the last 3 or 4 years to simply improve my quality of life. And every time I did that, and I took pieces of work and I hired people and I trained them and I, you know, I created people in my company that were systems people, process architects, those sorts of people. And these were people that could almost understand what I wanted. They can almost read my mind. And so eventually, and it took me a long time, eventually I got to the point where I was still working on my real estate business 55 hours a week, and then it was 50, and then it was 45, and it was 40, and now it's down to maybe 30 or less. But what's beautiful is in that same time frame, because of the work that we did and the value of real estate and the structure that you can create, my company has actually accelerated as I've gone from 55 hours down to 30.
Right. Yeah, your time shrinks and your income goes up, or your company's income goes up for sure. Cool. So real quick, I want to touch on the fact, because you didn't first get started in using other people's money, syndication, that stuff. You kind of got started first with the build out of your office building, but then you went into smaller residential properties and things like that, small multifamilies. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and tell us what you did with that first?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to make that a two-part story. So we built this building, and the building was so phenomenal for our brand that we had allocated 5 years of future growth. 19 months after we built the building, every single seat was filled. It was a technology education business. Wow. And so we were like, well, let's see if we can repeat this. But of course, because we had been very successful and the building's value had gone up, the guy behind us had a bigger building, and he knew that the value of his building was up. So he wanted $2 or $3 million more than we had. So we look at it and go, you know, just because the value of the building has gone up doesn't mean this is a bad idea. It still makes sense. We should still do it. But we didn't have the last $2 or $3 million. So we did something that now today, Justin, you and your listeners know as a syndication, though we probably broke every rule of syndication out there because we were technology. We had no idea that there's word syndication exists, that there's legal rules. So what we did was we had a bunch of doctors here in Fremont that are part of the Washington healthcare system. These are rich guys. They know us. We know them. We kind of worked together for a long time. So we put them into a room, right? And our pitch to them was that, hey, we're going to buy this 33,000 square foot building and we're going to take 13,000 square feet of it immediately. The remaining 20,000, we're going to break it up into 10 condos and we'll start taking office condos. And we're going to start taking each office condo one by one from you guys. We're going to build them out for you. Everyone will have their own 2,000 square foot suite. So you're not buying shares in a syndication. I didn't know what that was. You're not buying shares. Everyone's got their own, you know, suite. And so my goal, when I put them in this room, the founder CEO was not super articulate. So he kind of wanted me to do the talking. So he's sitting in the back and making comments. My goal was that if out of these 10 doctors that are in the room, if I can get like two of them to give me $350,000 each, that would be awesome, right? Because now I'm $700,000 of the way towards my gap. And so I finished describing this whole process. And they start asking me a few questions. And they're like, you know, what's the fees? And I'm like, what fees? I mean, we just need more space to grow, right?
Yeah.
They're like, so what's the split? And I'm like, well, what split? I mean, there's no split. I mean, you've got your own office and I've got mine. And, you know, if I need to rent it, I pay you fair rent. And so after a while, I see these puzzled looks on their faces and they start to seem to smile. Everyone's smiling. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe they think I'm a total idiot. So after a while, they tell me, you know, just leave the room. We want to talk amongst each other. They knew each other. So I'm leaving the room and I'm like, you know, maybe they just want to bitch about me. So I come back into the room and all 10 of them have their checkbooks out, right? And all 10 of them are like busy writing checks to me. And so they hand over these 10 checks, $3.5 million to me. And I'm like, I must be the greatest salesperson in the world. And I had that feeling of being the greatest salesperson in the world for about 60 seconds before I realized, no, as it happens, I'm not a great salesperson. Whatever I've given them must be the greatest deal in the world, right? Right.
Yeah.
And so it turned out that it wasn't my sales skills. It was a great deal.
Uh-huh.
I learned after doing this that I was supposed to charge a 5% developer fee. So for, you know, at $7-8 million building, I was supposed to charge $400,000. Didn't know that, didn't charge.
Yeah.
I was supposed to charge a 30-70 split, which would have made us like millions of dollars, right? Out of the profits of this entity. Didn't know that, didn't do it. And so a lot of people until today say, so, you know, you learned a hard lesson there. And I said, no, our intent was to be able to get 33,000 space of growth without paying for it. We only wanted to pay for 13,000, and then we wanted to be able to pick them one suite at a time. And that's what we did. And our business grew. And when we sold the company in 2013, all of those suites were occupied. Today, 7 years later, all of those suites are still occupied. So the doctors got a deal of a lifetime. But we didn't suffer. We got a better deal than them. We grew our business without putting our own money in. It was a win-win-win.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, I tell people that sometimes as well, is on a smaller scale, you know, people, they kind of get greedy sometimes and they want that extra, you know, 10 or 20,000 or 30,000 on a house or a single or small multifamily or whatever it is. And I think, well, the time value of that money, if it takes you another couple months to end up like getting a better deal, you could probably do better stuff with that. And just like, just take the offer while you have it. And then your brain starts going, you start thinking about the next phase and then that money will grow over time. So kind of the same way, they got a good deal. You got a good deal. Yeah. You missed out on some money, but you might not have never got to the next step in your career without doing that.
Our company wouldn't have got to the step. We sold it at class leading valuations. Without that building, no chance in hell that we would have done that. So we made millions later by being more focused on our goal, which was to grow our company rather than real estate itself. So anyway, I ended up buying one of those suites because one of the doctors had an issue in 2008 when the market crashed. So he backed out. I took his space. And for the first time in my life, Justin, my salary went up. My taxes went down.
Yeah.
That was a huge, you know, aha moment for me. So I was like super excited when 2008 happened and prices are falling. Everybody else around me is telling me you're the greatest idiot in the world for buying real estate. And I'm like, no, you guys don't understand. I'm trying to explain the math to people and they're just looking at me like I'm a total fool. They're like, oh no, but values are going down. And I'm like, why do I care? You know, here's the rent, right? So even if the value goes down, it doesn't change anything in my life. I'm going to make lots and lots of money. And when the values come back up 10 years later, I'm going to make even more money. It sounds very simple. I said it in a very simple way. Today, people, of course, accept this. But back then, everyone was telling me I was a true idiot, including my family, by the way. So I disregard them. I go to this website, Zillow.com, which back then was, you know, pretty small. And they had 3,300 cities. So they had 3,300 pages for each city in America. So I go to a Ukrainian hacker and I tell him, I want you to spider the entire Zillow website, all 3,300 pages. Get the data for me. Do it slowly. Please don't get me in trouble with the FBI. Don't crash the website or anything. And I thought, you know, he's going to do it slowly. It's going to take him months and he's going to charge me a few thousand dollars. Well, the next day, an Excel spreadsheet arrives, you know, in my mailbox with all 3,300 cities. All the data is in there and a bill for $100. And that day I learned the power of technology for real estate because I realized I'm about to make a very large amount of money. And I paid $100 to some Ukrainian hacker for this, right? And it was a very nice guy.
Yeah.
So not, you know, like a, you know, not a bad kind of hacker, but a good kind of hacker.
Sure.
So I take that, this huge Excel spreadsheet that he's created, and I sort it by just one field, which is he had looked at the value of each city, the value of real estate in 2005 at peak, and the value in December 2008. Obviously, there was a huge decline there. And so he had basically figured out the percentage decline. So I clicked that column, and I said, sort. And the city that had the largest decline in the United States happened to be in California, 145 miles away from me in Central Valley, Madera, California. So the next day is a Saturday. I jump into my car. I drive out to Madera, California. I get there at 9 in the morning, and I until 10 in the evening, I'm basically talking with people, talking with brokers, talking with everyone else. And I figure out the story of why Madera has fallen so much. Nothing wrong with Madera itself. It's 20 miles from Fresno. It's a nice area. But what had happened in 2006, Kaufman and Broad, big, you know, builder, goes there, builds 6,000 of these beautiful four-bedroom homes, you know, brick on the outside, very good-looking homes, very nice. And all 6,000 of them, their salesperson goes and finds these agricultural workers working a mile away and get them to sign those contracts. So now in late 2008, 100% of those people have left. So wow. An entire section of the city of Madeira, an entire piece of this city is empty, right? And it has these beautiful homes, nothing wrong with them at all. Roads are beautiful, grass is laid out. You know, some of the grass is burnt, but otherwise everything's perfect with these homes, right? Nobody's living there. Mm-hmm. So all the agricultural workers are like, you know, they're undocumented. They go, see ya, and they're off. And so I'm like, wow. So I go to a bank, and the bank's like, you know, we're selling these in groups. We can't sell them one at a time. You have to buy 10 of them, and they're, you know, they're like $1 million. So I offer them 900,000. They accept it. And then I'm like, am I a fool here? So I go and talk to a property manager. He says, look, Neil, the value of these homes is at least 200,000, because if we were to build them today, they would cost $200,000 to build. In the future, they're probably worth $250,000 or more. But you've got a problem, Neil. Everybody right now is the middle of a recession, and there's plenty of options for people in Fresno, right? Why would people in Fresno, all the jobs are in Fresno, it's 20 miles away. Nobody wants to come live here to Madeira. So I'm like, okay. And he says, by the way, if you crack this problem, you're going to make at least $1 million. As it happens, I cracked it and I made 2 million, right? Wow. So here's what I did. So I asked myself, how do I get people from Madeira, 20 miles away, to come, you know, from Fresno to come to Madeira? Here was the answer after lots of experimentation. So I go to my broker and I say, do you have anything in Fresno? He says, yeah, I have this old property. It's a 1994 property. It's a good price. So I go, okay, it's on Summerfield Lane. I buy the property. And I go back to the Ukrainian hacker and I say, do you know anybody that makes phone calls? And he's like, yeah, I know this person in the Philippines. She's really good. So I go hire the Filipino lady. I go hire the Ukrainian hacker. And I tell the Ukrainian hacker, I have this property that's in Fresno. What I want you to do is, I want this to be the most visible property on the World Wide Web. Find every listing website known to man, Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com, show me the rent. Find all of them. And he found like 59 of them. And I want this property there. And I want you to write scripts to refresh the property. So I get like absolutely bombarded with an avalanche, a mountain, a Mount Everest of leads for this one property in Fresno. He's like, okay, that's fine. So the guy is true to his word. He spends, you know, I spend $400 or $500 with him, and the phone is just going insane. I redirect all the incoming calls to the lady in the Philippines. And so the lady in the Philippines is like, well, yeah, this, we're going to be done in 2 days here. I mean, everybody and their mother wants to rent this property in at Summerfield. So I tell her, yeah, but here's your pitch. You're going to talk to every single person here and say, look, I'm already sending a bunch of people to Summerfield. There's no way you're going to get that property. But we also own 10 more properties. And by the way, I haven't bought them yet. Okay, I just have them in contract, but my broker knows what I'm doing. So we tell them, we have these 10 other properties. They're in Madeira. They're exactly 21 miles away. And we would like to give you a $50 Amazon card or a gas card if you will make an appointment and walk through that property in Madeira and spend at least 30 minutes at the property. And please note that property is much bigger, much newer, and it's $400 less in rent. Okay? So a whole bunch of people are like, no, I don't want to leave Fresno, and they hang up on us. But one out of every three or four people are like, really? $50? All I have to do is just tour this property? $50. Okay. All right. I'm going to do it. So I go back to my broker and I say, look, I'm going to show the property to a few people. I know I don't own it. Could you talk to the bank? And, you know, banks in 2008 were super. This is Jan 2009, banks are super flexible. They're like, God, you know, we have 6,000 properties. We don't know what to do with. Please do whatever you want. Show this to people. We'll take the liability. They were really nice to me, right? By this time, I'm talking to banks all the time. So I start sending these people there, and I put an ad on Craigslist for a person that lives in Madeira to show all the properties, and I pay him $50 for each, you know, showing, and I give him $50 more. You know, my wife is doing all this stuff, actually. Sure. And she's showing these properties. And so all these people are coming in. And one by one, they come in and they're like, really? So much bigger, so much nicer, brand new home, you know, extra bedroom, $400 less in rent. They're calculating their extra gas mileage in 20 minutes. I mean, there's no traffic on Highway 99. And before I know it, all 10 of the properties are rented. My mother-in-law buys some, I rent those too. People in my family start to notice what I'm doing. They start buying. And this is in the middle of 2009 and end of 2009, they all failed. And I'm my cash flow is incredible. And still my family is telling me, you're an idiot and you're an idiot. Eventually I told them, how can I be an idiot and make $10,000 a month?
Right.
Yeah. Before appreciation, before all the other benefits, before my principal payback. And eventually they all came around and then went out and bought a bunch of homes. But you know what changed in my life, Justin? It wasn't the 10 grand. To be honest, I was making so much money as a tech, you know, COO, that 10,000 wasn't a huge amount of money for me, right? But that was the best 10,000 a month I've ever made because I didn't have to work for it. I did it. I used my smarts. My tenants were now in. I had no leases to sign for the next year because all the leases were all signed in the same 2 or 3 month time frame. All of them were good tenants. I was very nitpicky. Doctors, lawyers, nurses, good people. And I was like, for the first time in my life, I felt free. Because the problem is when you have a $350,000 salary, what are you thinking all the time, Justin? You know it. You've done six figures.
Yeah.
Are they going to find two people to replace me with, or three guys, and they're going to pay them $100,000 each?
Yeah.
And those three guys are probably going to do a better job than I can. That's what everybody in tech that has a big fat salary is always thinking. And that's why we work weekdays and weekends and evenings. And we give up all the time with our families because we are so freaking paranoid that one day all of this will be gone.
Yeah. You get addicted, or you get like connected to that paycheck and you're like, man, if I don't keep working these weekends, like that number might go down, or I might lose it, or something. You're like mentally stuck on it.
It's paycheck addiction. You got it. I mean, that you said it exactly right. Paycheck addiction. And I kicked my paycheck addiction habit because of that $10,000, because I said, you know what? If I get laid off, I have money in the bank. I'm going to go buy more of these houses. Just stop killing yourself. And so I go to my boss and I tell him, I have to slow down. I'm now 37 years old. I've, you know, burned the candle at both ends. It's not going to happen anymore. I would have never worked up the courage to do that if I didn't have that $10,000 in cash flow. And guess what my boss said? We love you. Work as hard as you can. Let me hire you an assistant.
You're like, okay, sweet. Now I can spend more time buying more houses.
Right. Yeah. So I kept doing that. I got into duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, bought a bunch of them. Didn't buy a big multifamily. Should have done that. And what I did was, I asked myself this question, Justin. The question was, what metrics should I be using to buy these homes, right? To figure out the best cities and best neighborhoods in the US. I first tried to figure out if anybody was selling those metrics. People were at, you know, $30,000 a year, so I didn't buy. And then I thought, is somebody giving them away? Maybe there's somebody publishing them. Nobody was. So I said, okay, I'm going to be the guy that comes up with these metrics. And so I hired some statistical analysis guys and I churned through the same 3,300 cities, went back to the Ukrainian hacker, created a database, mined information about real estate profits and profit increases, matched those up, wrote a set of 10 metrics. I call these real focuses. Five are for best cities, five are for best neighborhoods, and started publishing them on the web. And I thought maybe, you know, I'll get a few people that'd be interested. And there was just a ridiculous number of people that started using them. And if you go to udemy.com/realfocus, you'll notice that right now there are 6,000 people taking the Real Focus course that explains these 10 metrics and how to use them. And, you know, obviously there's more students coming in and students that finish the course all the time, but 6,000 people, very few real estate courses can boast of that. And then I started teaching it at meetups in the Bay Area, and huge numbers of people would show up because I wasn't selling anything. I was a tech guy, I was a geek. And so I was this odd guy that had nothing to sell, wasn't in real estate, but was talking about real estate, and people would show up. And then people started asking me about podcasts. So I started doing those. And I think I've just recently done my 100th podcast as a guest. And then people started calling me to conferences. So I would show up there. And then first they made me a panelist, then they made me a speaker. And then I ended up as a kind of the keynote speaker. And now I teach at about a dozen conferences a year. It all sounds like it was planned. None of it was planned. It just sort of happened. And it happened over a very long period of time from 2009 to 2013 when I was still at my day job, and then kind of phased out of it. And so it just sort of kept growing. And now we have a huge database. We have 3,000 registered investors. We've raised about $50 million to buy, you know, more than $250 million in real estate. But all of it really goes back to those 10 focuses. We still use them every single day.
Okay. Wow. It's kind of the hockey stick curve you're saying. You know, it started out slow and then all of a sudden now it's like so many things happen to you and you get called out to all these different opportunities, and that's awesome. You know, we got maybe 7 minutes or so left before we kind of transition out, but you ended up moving into obviously the syndication space. That's what your company is based on now. What kind of prompted you to go from the smaller residential properties up into the bigger apartment communities?
Scale. I got to the point where I had 35 tenants of my own and it was saturating. I was too much in the weeds. I was too much tenants and toilets. I wanted to move over to the management, to the statistics, to the numbers, to the balance sheet, to the P&L statements, rather than dealing with tenants. And multifamily allows me to do that. So multifamily allows me to 10x my time. And now today it allows me to 100x my time. And there's just no way to do that with single family real estate.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And everybody, you know, so many people that are in small single family, they're like, oh, I don't want to answer the phone in the middle of the night, or people that don't get into real estate, you know, don't ever buy rental properties. And I say, well, for one, that hardly ever happens. You know what I mean? To where you are. If not, you need to like hire a good property manager. For two, then get into, you know, apartments or, you know, economies of scale. You have 20, 30 or 50 units at one building. You're not going to be running all over the place to like deal with this situation. So I definitely
you have to respect your time. I mean,
yeah.
One of the things I tell people is, let's say you're unemployed, set the value of your time at $50 an hour. Okay. And then when you do that, you're going to get better at using your time. And within 6 months, move it up to $100 an hour. Now it's going to be really tough because you're going to have to leave things that are $80 an hour because you're going to say my time is worth 100, and then 150, and then 200. Right? Right now, I set my time at $1,000 an hour. If you know, so it took me a long time to get here, but you have to respect your own time because you can't scale if you think that your time is not worth money. Your time is worth money. There's only so many things that you can do here in this life. And so start by putting a value on your time.
100% agree. That's good. That's a good thing to say. So real quick, what do you think about this whole market that's going on right now? Like, what are your thoughts for the future? You think it's just going to kind of rebound back like a V recession, or do you think it's going to kind of come up and then go back down for the next, you know, longer recession? What do you think?
I don't see how a V is possible. I think that a V is for people that are very bullish, are perma bulls. I am not. I look at the statistics. Today, we're recording this at the end of May. There's 21 million people unemployed, even though technically America is open. Confidence in the economy has fallen to one of its lowest numbers ever at 87. There's 18% less gas being purchased today than there was in March. There's a 6% decline in shopping at retailers. Flying on airplanes is down 98%.
Yeah.
Buying a house is down 10%. How do you create a V economy when all these massive drivers of money and income, you know, the gas, airplanes, houses, these are all drivers of the economy. Jobs is the biggest driver of the economy. It's going to take a long time for it to come back. So, I mean, maybe it's a V that has a big, you know, piece at the bottom. So it looks like a V that's more like a, you know, a U, right? So it might be more like a U, but I don't believe so. I believe that this is going to be the Nike checkbox, you know, so you kind of look at the Nike swoosh and it's like down and then it's kind of more like that, right? So you know what a check mark looks, right?
Yeah.
I think we're in for a check mark. When we get back to February 2020, by February 2022. So it takes 2 years for our check mark to come back to where we were. That's my belief.
Yeah. And you know, the more I've talked to several people that are very successful people and, you know, either thousands of units or just huge companies that they've ended up building. And all the people that are real successful and have big, you know, companies or net worths, they all say what you're saying, same thing. It's the other people that I talk to that are kind of in the middle ground that think they're very bullish and they think it's just going to keep going up forever. And maybe that's their lack of experience that they haven't been through like market cycles. I'm not sure what the difference is there, but yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure what I think. I don't think I know enough to really think what's going to happen, you know?
Well, let me add one last comment to that before we finish. There's a lot of people that believe that recessions are bad. There's a lot of people that believe that market cycles are bad. If that's your belief, you need to learn a lot more about market cycles. Mm-hmm. A market cycle is like a spring cleaning. So when a cycle turns negative, that spring cleaning happens. Companies that were hanging on for dear life because of a great economy are gone. And because those weak companies are gone, strong companies like yours now have the ability to grow their market share. And that is what creates a strong economy. You want a strong economy where people get paid more, you need to have strong companies, not a bunch of weak companies that are basically hanging on for dear life. It is so much easier to gain market share once a recession starts because there's a thinning out of the herd. The problem is we haven't had a recession for 8 or 9 years and we haven't had a thinning out of the herd. And the economy in some ways has become diseased. And so this recession, like every other recession, helps to finish that. It helps to clean things out. It's like you're flushing out your insides, right? You're doing the whole juice thing, and it now makes you a healthy economy again. So if we don't go into a recession for 20 years, you're going to end up with an economy where all kinds of bad things will happen. It's you're artificially feeding it medicine to keep the patient healthy.
Looks what good on the outside.
You want to go through this process, finish it off. Yes, there's going to be a lot of pain, but what you're doing is you're just taking your pain now and allowing the economy to rebound and move forward. But that pain is not 6 months. It's, you know, it's a year, it's 2 years.
Right. 100% agree. Right on. Well, my one question I want to ask for the transitioning out is where's your favorite place for people to learn more about real estate, whether they're just getting into it or wanting to move from small multifamily, large multifamily? I think you have your multifamily education company. Is that, what's your thoughts on learning new topics of real estate?
I'm going to plug my website because it's extremely powerful. Yeah. At multifamilyu.com, that's multifamily followed by the u.com. Firstly, you can take my location magic course. It's completely free. There's no upsell. And it talks about these 10 metrics that allow you to pick the best cities and neighborhoods in the US. That's on that website. Each year we do about 50 webinars. About somewhere around 30 to 40,000 people show up for these 50 webinars, so one a week. They're deep dives. We bring in experts. I think we Rod Cleef's considering coming in on the next one. We've had the CEO of Realty Mogul is coming on the next one. We've had the guy that runs the Bigger Pockets podcast was on a few weeks ago. So these are deep dive. They are not like podcasts, which are great. Mm-hmm. But they are a different format. There's a lot of PowerPoint. There's a lot of argument. We create a sense of debate, and we allow people to be very clear with their opinions, and we allow other people to contradict their opinions. So that we do a town hall format, we do a webinar format. It's very uncheesy. You know, it's designed to really be tangible and deep dive. So check out multifamilyu.com. You'll be blown away by the content that's on that website. And then, in terms of content, my only advice to you is this. It doesn't matter if it's Multifamily U or YouTube or Udemy or wherever else that you're learning. Please tell yourself that learning, even for 30 minutes, is not worthwhile if you don't get one action item out of it. Within 5 minutes of completing a webinar, 5 minutes of completing a podcast, create an action item for yourself and put it in your calendar, because if you just write it down, you'll never do it. Put it in your calendar, specific time, specific date, I'm going to do something. And always when you start doing something, you're going to find excuses. I find amazingly creative excuses not to do stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's some that I'm really proud of. They're total bullshit, but you know, they don't seem like it when you're giving it to them yourself. But if you keep putting stuff in the calendar, even if you do one out of three, that's 33% more than you would have done if you had just learned. So learn and implement. Don't just learn.
Right on. That's great information. Well, where can people find out more about you besides Multifamily U?
Actually, it's super easy. So, I have the great fortune and misfortune of being the only Neil Bawa on the World Wide Web. So if you type in N-E-A-L, last name B-A-W-A, and hit enter on Google, you'll find dozens of articles, hundreds of podcasts, dozens of webinars. I'm sure there'll be some people bitching about me. I haven't found one yet, but I'm sure it's there. And so I think that's probably the best way to learn more about me. If you're data driven, if you're analytics driven, if you feel like you're not getting enough information without the spin, you know, just check out my name.
Right on, Neil. Well, I really appreciate you being here. There's tons of good information, your wealth of knowledge for sure. So thanks for being here. I appreciate it. And you have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, Justin. Bye-bye. Yes, sir.